Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed.
And diaspora up to speed, Weekend Nigeria. And it's a few minutes after the hour, and our guest is on standby. On standby. This Nigerian parlance, I don't know whether it's actually correct. I need to go and find out. Our guest is on standby. I think it is, actually. So we're speaking with Omotola Faumi. She's a breakthrough learning facilitator with multiple channels of expression, a lifelong learner and inspiring leader committed to raise, inspire and strengthen others to fearlessly achieve their dreams and make meaningful contributions to the economic and social prosperity of Africa. A graduate of History and International Relations from Obafemi Awolowo University, Ile-Ife, she holds a certificate in Entrepreneurial Management from Pan Atlantic University, Lagos, Ethical Human and Social Behavioral Research Investigation from MIT, Entrepreneurship, Innovation and Social Change from UN Mandated University for Peace, UPEACE, Costa Rica. In 2018, she qualified as a Microsoft Certified Innovative Educator Trainer, a John Maxwell Certified Leadership Trainer. She has gained experience working with UNDP, DMT Mobile Toilet, VIP Consulting Associate Consultant, Glow Mobile, the John Maxwell Company Nigeria Africa, CEFA, Hong Kong Positive Growth Africa, MIT Gov.Lab Project, Stretch, Urban Promise International. She is an international development consultant working at the intersection of public, private, academic and social sectors to accelerate profit for Africa and Africans. She serves as a youth representative of the Human Capital Development Policy Commission and Government and Institutions Policy Commission of the NESG. Her non-profit organization, Stretch Center, serves youth, women and girls in low-income communities, connecting them to opportunities, resources and leadership development pathways for economic and social prosperity. It provides a community resource center. Omotola works to end modern-day slavery through her organization, RAIS, Rescue Africans in Slavery Organization. It rescues, returns, rehabilitates, and reintegrates victims of modern slavery across Africa from the Middle East. Since 2019, they have safely returned 315 ladies from Lebanon, Oman, Côte d'Ivoire, Saudi Arabia, and Ghana. A member of the Business Process Management Institute Nigeria, she believes in the ability of businesses to scale by building their systems and structures for growth. She is currently a graduate student of organizational leadership at the Center for Business Leadership, Eastern University, Pennsylvania. Omotola, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Okay. So let me start on a light note. When I first read this bio, my head was just doing bang, 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 bang. The first thing I thought of was, what is it that motivated you, first and foremost, to go in all this direction? I see a thread, though. I see the prosperity of Africans. For you, that is key, it seems. First and foremost, let's thank you again for coming on. And let's let our viewers know that today we are focusing on the rescue of Africans in slavery. And I had first come in contact with you on a group that we're both on. And also when I talked about some young ladies in Ivory Coast, I think this was about a year or so ago. So first and foremost, why did you go into this? What motivated you, being that you're black, you're Nigerian, you're a woman? I mean, it obviously shows that your brain is expanded. Why did you go into this? Please tell us.
Into learning or into trafficking?
Into the trafficking. Yeah. Oh, wait, okay, let's get to know you. Into learning, because all these learnings, why? What are you pursuing? What is your goal?
Okay, I think I see, first of all, I think I really enjoy reading and studying. Mm. And I find out that the more you know, the more you know you don't know. I studied history and international relations, but then you ask, okay, what do I do with this? Mm. And even though, of course, when I was in university, they would say, oh, well, if you study history and international relations, you work in an embassy, blah, blah, blah. However, there is a systematic way to grow. Mm. And if you look around, there is a lot of poverty, but we need to close the knowledge gap if we are going to grow.
Mm.
So that's what keeps pushing me to learn, to grow, and see how can we multiply it for others. Because it's we have a lot of successful people in Nigeria, individuals, but we are not collectively a rich or successful nation. So it's how can we scale this?
Have you had any success? So with your learnings, have you been able to implement this in any way, whether small or huge? And have you seen the success rate of it?
Yes, I'm able to build small groups of people who then go on to do other things.
Okay.
So when I started, whether it's the community project back home, it's still running. I started with a group of people and they built a community resource center, train people, and then they're able to run them. So they don't need me.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Same thing also with that's for the community resource project. There was the digital literacy skills program for women as well. You train a few people, train others, and then empower them to go and teach others.
That is
so it's the same model. It's discipleship. The angle to it. If you train others, invest time in a few people, spend a lot of time with them, and they would grow others.
Okay, so a follow-up question on that is, how do you manage to change the mindset? Because a lot of Nigerians are of the opinion that once they have learned something, they don't want to share it because they think it will diminish what they know, and they're not willing to bring other people up in that because it will be competition for them. How did you manage to surmount that? How did you change the mindset of those that you're training so that they can go out and train others?
I personally, I think I get to, on a personal note, I know better when I teach others. So it's the same thing I teach. It's just like I'm using the example of Bible school, for example. If you go to Bible school and study 2 years, 3 years, and you're a Bible scholar, you only get better each time you teach it to a different set of students.
Very true.
See your knowledge gaps. You get contributions from what they share with you and realize, I don't know much. I need to study more. So the more you share, the more you increase your capacity to learn.
That's very true.
I think those who think they shouldn't share are not fully aware of what they're missing. And what you really know, no one can really take away from
exactly.
you. It's yours.
Exactly. I do agree with that. Okay, so now let's focus. So on to Rescue Africans in Slavery Organization. What prompted you to start that?
I'll go back to 2018 because I didn't really set out to start an organization. 2018, I was working with an organization called CIFA. CIFA is in Hong Kong. And we're working on a strategic communications project in Nigeria. Purpose was to help educate potential victims and their enablers to spot fraudulent recruiters and identify them, and for those who are already stuck, how to get help for them in the countries they were stuck in. So I was in charge of Lagos Island. And to be honest, prior to that project, my knowledge of modern slavery and human trafficking was very limited. Limited only to, I don't know if you know CNN Freedom Project, where they say modern slavery. That was my only understanding of modern slavery. But when we started training for this particular project, it opened my eyes. I remember arguing, no, we don't have modern slavery in Lagos, no. When they told me I was going to work in Lagos Island, my headache was, where was I going to find people to talk to? But by day two, working with a team of 10 people, local migration experts, educational outreach officers, were required to talk to various groups of people. So we had schools, churches, markets covered. And you talk to, on average, about 8 to 10 people per day. And then you're surprised, like almost every house in Lagos Island where we worked at the time. We covered Lagos Island and Agbado, but I was in charge of Lagos Island. So I can't speak of Agbado Crossing. But Lagos Island, almost every house had what I call a Tukumbo story, Sheshede.
Wow.
Oh, this person just returned from this. Or this person went, or this person has gone and has not returned. She left 8 years ago. They told her she was going to work as this. And, you know, we had to write reports of those stories almost every day.
Mm.
If you write, this particular project then was even focused on modern slavery towards the UK, because it was a UK donor-funded project about people who take families who take in girls and say, well, let me help you train this girl. They take her to the UK, and then she's a house help. She's not able to go to school and all that. That was even the focus. But it was in the process of interviewing so many people in Lagos Island that I then started to discover the Middle Eastern routes. Cairo, they would tell us in a lot of their narrations, Cairo, Dubai. I remember some markets we went to, Surah and Sangros Market in Lagos, had a lot of women who would tell us, oh, I have a child in Cairo who has gone for 8 years. I have not spoken to her since she left. She hasn't called me. And you ask, so how did you hear of the opportunity? It is always somebody, and in quotes, Auntie Adubo. Or so it's a close family member who introduced them to that opportunity. So they usually won't ask so many probing questions. Because if your pastor brings something to you, you already have faith in your pastor. So you won't ask the kind of questions you would ask.
You should ask an unknown person, yes.
So I remember that we covered about over 5,000 people.
Wow.
That period. And I remember being depressed and being very traumatized with the stories I was hearing. We had even cases of, apart from human trafficking, forced labor, sex trafficking, there was also organ harvesting, which I don't think a lot of people in Nigeria are fully aware of.
As in, they would take organ harvesting from here and harvest their organs?
Yes. We had a case on, I think this was a girl, we met her about February 2018, in the course of the project, who had been deceived, taken to Malaysia. Either her liver or her kidney was removed. Then she was eventually sent back. By the time she was taken, this was done, she was drugged and woke up on a hospital bed, came back. They had done the operation, taking whatever it is they wanted to take from her. And she felt sick. And then the person who took her then said, oh, maybe you should go back to Nigeria and recover. It was when she got back to Nigeria, she realized that something had been taken away from her. She just thought she had surgery because she had an accident. And there are many people like that. They're harvesting different parts of them for sale.
Wow.
So these are some of the things we discovered in the course of that project. And I was just very depressed. Like, how come I don't know this? I consider myself very educated and enlightened. And if I'm this ignorant, how much more other people? Now, this was in Lagos Island. We didn't even touch any other part of Lagos, just Lagos Island. So that was my first interest in this issue of modern slavery and human trafficking. But I didn't, at the time, think of setting up an organization. The setting of an organization would be prompted by my friend, Mutilola Adekunle, who we were actually like co-founders for the organization. She told me about another lady who, at that time, had reached out to her on Instagram asking for help to be sent, to get back to Nigeria. And she narrated her story that she was a graduate, the lady was a graduate of English from the University of Ibadan, was deceived, told that she was going to be given a job as a teacher in Oman. Unfortunately, and she paid, I think, about $1,000 to that, what I call the fraudulent recruiter, to process her documents. He had told her she was going to Dubai. It was when they arrived in Dubai, he then told her, this is not your final stop. You still have to take another plane to Muscat in Oman. Arriving there, she was then told, I think when she arrived there, was when she discovered, you're not going to be a teacher. This is the person who has bought you. That's the people I call the slave masters who make the purchase of the ladies. And so, at that time, raised money to get her back. It was just supposed to be her. However, Once she arrived in Nigeria about, I think, October last year, we then started to ask, are there more of you? And they said, oh, I can give you 20 other people. 20? Wow. I mean, she wasn't saying one or two or three. She said, I can tell you about 20 other people. So we put these 20 in a WhatsApp group, started to engage with them, and then realized it's the same story. They told me I was going to teach English. They told me I was going to teach English to an Arabic family. They told me I was going to work as a sales girl. They promised me I would earn $2,000 a month. They promised me I'll earn $1,000 a month. That's usually the story. And then the Nigerian agent has a contract signed that says that they would pay him 10% of their earnings. So 10% of 200
of 2,000, yeah, $2,000 would be 200.
Yes. But on arriving there, the lady then discovers her pay is actually either $150 or $200 a month.
Of course.
So she has to remit this back sometimes for 6 months, sometimes 8 months, to whoever the fraudulent recruiter is in Nigeria. And so that happened. Again, we hadn't set up an organization. It was just trying to help girls come back home. It was in, I think it was in December when we sent a ticket to a particular girl and she was refused coming. And we asked why you have a ticket. I said they resold me to another madam.
You gotta be
so
kidding
I'm unable
me.
To come. That was when we said, okay, wait. This thing looks like it's not just buying tickets for these girls to get back home. Because even the first person from Oman,
Hello? Oh Lord have mercy. Can you hear me? Yes. Okay.
Yes, I can.
Okay. You were saying.
Hello?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay.
You were saying.
Okay.
Yes,
so,
I can hear you.
Yeah, so it's not enough to just buy a ticket and ask the girl to come back home. There is much more. Some of them have to pretend like they're sick so that they can be rejected by the slave master. Some have to pretend they have all kinds of ailments so that they, if they're not rejected, the man or the woman, most likely the man anyway, will not allow them leave. They say things like, I have bought you, I paid for you. And they are right. They pay between $10,000, sometimes $12,000 for each maid.
As in for life?
You can't just yes. They paid for you. Those are words that come out of their mouth. They'll tell you, paid for you. I can do whatever I want with you. And then there's something called a kafala system that ties the employee to the slave master. So even if she decides to run away and gets to the airport, the immigration officials of that country, and it doesn't matter, usually at least Oman, Lebanon, can arrest her and take her to prison for trying to escape. So having her passport is not enough. Okay, I forgot to mention that on arrival, they take their passports and their phones from
yes,
them.
Yes, I've heard that. And so I was going to ask you, so how do you now communicate with them on these groups that you form? But please go ahead and then answer that question.
Okay, so they take their passports from them and then so they are cut off. They can't go.
Yes.
For the groups, the truth is that they find us. I would love to say we find them, but that would not be completely true. We just put out the links and ask if you know anyone or if you're in distress, join this group.
So they find a way to join the groups and then maintain that communication. Okay.
Communicate with them from there. We have them in different country groups. So we have Oman group, we have Lebanon group, we have Saudi Arabia group, and the girls sort of really engage. They know themselves. I don't know how, but they seem to know themselves. There are many people involved in this.
Of course.
There are so many people involved. So many. So many. In fact, when we, earlier, around January, when we just really started, we were trying to go after agents, investigate them. There was a particular lady who was from Lebanon, a Nigerian who was taken to Lebanon. And she told us that when she was traveling, about 50 others were trafficked by the same guy. So we identified this guy, put on a security team, we gave his details to our security team, and then they were doing some investigations and tracked him to Ikorodu, because his base is in Ikorodu. But the officer investigating had gone about 3 times to working as an undercover officer, but her phone was bugged around early January, at least before January 14. So the next time she went, she was killed.
Oh,
they had discovered
goodness.
She was an undercover officer. She was killed with a machete, and we had to bury her in take her body to be buried in Edo State, Akoko Edo. So since then, we don't directly go after agents anymore. We just collect their names and turn it into NAPTIP.
Wow.
NAPTIP is the National Agency for Prohibition of Trafficking in Persons. And we just hope that NAPTIP would prosecute. So far, we haven't heard anything about any of the names that we submitted to them, but we keep collating and sending to NAPTIP names of fraudulent agents. But we don't go after them anymore.
Okay, so I now feel like you felt in 2018. Because I'm shocked, first and foremost, to hear that the girls are not being trafficked to Europe, but they're going to Oman and the UAE, Dubai.
Yes.
And I'm thinking,
yes.
I don't understand why. Why? And then first,
it's a business.
I agree that it's a business, but I'm just thinking, you know, yes. Let's use you and me. The example, and I'm not castigating or condemning. Let's use the example of this graduate from the university who read English.
Yes.
If I'm going to come up with $1,000 for somebody,
yes.
In Nigerian Naira now,
yes.
That is what? About four.
Almost 700,000.
Why would I? First, where do I find this money? How do I give somebody?
Yes.
This does not. Does this include my transport money, my FA, my blah, de blah, de blah, de blah? Of course it doesn't, Abby. Going. So this is just the agent money, Abby?
No.
So we first find the agent money. If I turn this 400,000 naira, which is the way that I always think, even if it's pure water I'm selling, would I not have done something? Is it the lure of I want to go abroad that beclouds the reasoning? Or what is it that they say to you that made them say yes to this thing when they didn't know what all the details were?
I think the lure to go abroad is one. I also think that a lot of the agents, like I mentioned earlier, walk through trusted
people.
It's a very highly organized informal network. And they are ready to kill anyone within the chain who is, who challenges them or who asks too much questions. It's organized crime. And everybody benefits from it. So if you ask too many questions,
like the girl that there was macheted, exactly.
If you ask too many questions, if you probe too deeply, I think also, I want to also mention that some of the enablers are actually the parents of these girls.
I agree. I've heard
and
that.
I say that. I say that in two instances that I'm familiar with.
Mm.
There is an instance of a girl who we intercepted. We got to know before she was going to travel.
Mm.
And we knew the agents that was taking her.
Mm.
So we flagged her at the airport. And she was put on a no-fly list and delayed from getting
on that
aircraft.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was we saving her life. But her mom did not feel that way. The mom was very upset and still curses me till today. She said, in Yoruba,
I'm sorry, I have to
meaning
reply in Yoruba.
Child to
yes, but me, I have to reply in Yoruba. I mean, let me, so that for those that don't understand, how is her child going to progress when she's going to be a slave?
She doesn't know. She believes that the child is going to work as whatever it is they told her. He was going to work as a salesperson. She's going to work. They don't tell them you're going to be sold. They don't tell them you're going to work as a maid. And if you listen to, even on radio, a lot of these adverts are, I know of Lagos Island, maybe because I worked a lot around the place.
Mm.
There are lots of flyers and posters saying, work in Dubai,
can work in UAE.
I've actually seen those things.
Those are recruiters. Those are fraudulent recruiters. So they masquerade as travel agencies. So you see a travel agency, okay, they should know what they're talking about. And then they use, like I said, their channels are also relatively easy and informal.
Mm.
So all a recruiter needs to do, set up a Facebook page or an Instagram page, and he shows on the day every girl is going, she's excited. So he's capturing that video. She's getting on the plane. Of course, she doesn't know who is picking her up. So mm-hmm. she's sending a picture of herself to the person here mm-hmm. and whoever is picking her up. Now, all those pictures are pictures of seeming success.
Yes.
Right? So the fraudulent recruiter in Nigeria, for example, takes those pictures, puts them back on his social media pages mm-hmm. and say, successful employment, safely arrived in Dubai. And so another person sees that and say, oh, if he can help this girl,
he can help me too.
He can help me.
It's like that. So they don't need an office.
Of course.
They don't need so much to set up. They don't need an office. Their office, many of them, is just WhatsApp. And immediately the girls arrive in what country of destination, they'll create a group for those girls. They're communicating with them all through. Once they arrive in the country of destination, every girl is exited from that group. The group is deleted. The girls' numbers are blocked. So when the girl is stuck in country of destination, she cannot call a Nigerian agent.
Oh, my goodness.
She keeps calling. He won't respond. We've had a number of girls that ladies, our case managers work with, where we have to force them in Nigeria to say, you have to get this girl back home. You need to speak to her boss. I don't know if you recall, there was a high-profile case in January of Omolola Ajayi, whose video went viral. She was one of the people that we worked with. I worked with her personally for 3 weeks because she didn't have a phone. Her boss seized her phone. So I used to speak with her using her boss's phone.
How did you do that?
To him and tell him he can't speak English, so he has an interpreter. He speaks Arabic, but there's an English interpreter with him who tells him what I say. Mm. So I say, I'm her sister from Nigeria, and we haven't spoken to her in a while. We want to be sure she's fine. And then he says, well, she's fine. You can only talk to her for 3 minutes. You can only talk to her for 5 minutes, usually about that.
So how do you pass on the... No, I don't even want to know how you pass on the information. Let me not, because really?
Sometimes if I speak in Yoruba, he doesn't understand.
She's
Yoruba, so I'll speak in Yoruba, he doesn't understand. But it took a while, and then eventually we said, do a video. Now, I could go into details of her own story.
Please.
She did a video. The video went viral. Fortunately for her, and I say fortunately, this doesn't happen to most people. The video got into the hand of her uncle here in the U.S., in Maryland. And then he said he knows this face, put it on their... She's from... I can't recall that village now, but it's somewhere in Ilorin.
Mm.
If it comes to my... I can't remember right now. He put it on their, like, town union, their WhatsApp group chat. And so the video went very far. The uncle circled back to us to ask, how can he find this girl? I said, I've been talking to her almost every day. He said, okay, if that's the case, he's willing to do everything to identify this lady and then pay her ransom. Because for some, you have to pay redemption money.
Mm.
So in his own case, this uncle raised $5,000 to redeem Omolola from her trafficker.
Wow.
Then... That's Omolola. She had a cousin too, who was also Omolola and Gloria Taibright. And then the person who trafficked them was in Ilorin, a Lebanese married to a Nigerian woman. So the Nigerian woman is the one who does the recruiting. The Lebanese man is the one who does the processing. So to get Omolola released, her uncle had to call, the guy's name is Wafik. You can Google the name because he's in NAPTIP's custody currently.
Mm.
Wafik then called Omolola's boss, arranged how the money will be transferred to him, and that was when he released her. Until then, he said no, he bought her. She's his property, and there's nothing anyone can do to get her freed. It was only after her video went viral that process had happened. The uncle had even bought a ticket for her to get back to Nigeria. And then the Nigerian mission in Lebanon then got involved as well, and she was able to safely return. But that is just one case. I think her case is the one that has opened up Lebanon to many other people. Because I don't know if they were evacuating a lot of this number of people from Lebanon as last year or 2 years ago. But her case was what opened that space up. And so much is still going on in Lebanon. The one good thing I must mention is that the Lebanese ambassador to Nigeria currently, as at May this year, said they have stopped issuing domestic visas to Nigerians, at least temporarily, pending, so that at least let those who have gone out come back in. And be sure that no other people are exiting.
Wow. I mean, my brain is still reeling because I'm thinking, the way I love my country, I'm thinking to myself, how hard could it be for me that I will go to, and I've been to Cairo, and honestly, between me and you, while, you know, I didn't think it was anything fantastic. I thought there were some bad places in Nigeria that were better than some of the places I visited in Egypt. And I couldn't. Yes. So now I'm thinking I will be sitting down here, and then somebody will come and tell me that I should come, and they'll give me a job in Cairo. No, Nilo, I will not go, because I'm like, which Cairo? Those dirty streets, those people. No way. So why would
it's
I
because
think?
Because you know.
Exactly. I guess for somebody who has never traveled before, they probably have never left Lagos Island or the Lorry or wherever it is that they are. And even if they have, they're thinking it can't be as bad as it is here. So how do we, being that you've been in this for a little while and you've done over 300 people, how do we change the mindsets? Because that's the thing. How do we change the mindset of young girls?
Thank you. That's a very critical question.
What do
I
we
think,
do?
One, that the campaign needs to go down to the grassroots. Remember I said, even I, who I assume is enlightened or educated, was completely ignorant about the scale of this until 2018. Therefore, if I didn't know, imagine the girl in Ibadan. In fact, Ibadan is another very huge trafficking hub, a very big trafficking hub. Imagine the girl in Ondo, in Osun, in Oyo, all the way to Edo. Now, the thing about trafficking, these areas I've mentioned are the ones who go to the Middle East. Mm. From Edo to the Southwest are those who go to Europe.
Mm.
But we're also forgetting Cote d'Ivoire, Ghana. We have Nigerians. Sorry, this is an aside. Mm. But we have Nigerians who lie to girls that they are going to Spain to work as hairdressers. You are going to Europe to work as tailors or dressmakers, and then tell them, this is a true story, one of the ladies that we also worked with, true story, she was working in Abuja as a hairdresser, having left her parents in Ondo. The parents then, someone approached her, I think her aunt in Abuja, told her she's very good, I think she worked very well in Spain. This person took her by road from Abuja to Lagos, and from Lagos told her, we need to get to Cote d'Ivoire because that's where the person who is buying your ticket is. This person took her to Cote d'Ivoire to the house of a supposed madam, and that was the last time she saw this trafficker. The madam then said, you owe me 2 million CFA francs.
Ha!
And so you worked for me for 2 years as a sex slave. Slave. Yes, and she worked sleeping with about 15 men per day.
What?
For 2 years. From October 2017 to November 2019. We found her in December 2019. And we're able to send someone from Nigeria to pick her up in Cote d'Ivoire and bring her back to Nigeria. So she arrived in Nigeria like 2 days before, 2 days before Christmas last year. And again, she's just one of many. We've had to discover so many others. We still have some girls currently in Cote d'Ivoire who are not able to come into Nigeria because of the border closure, but they've escaped the sex
rings
where they used to work. Yes.
Please, I'm sorry, I had to do that calculation. So that people understand when I ask my next question. 15 guys in 1 day.
15 guys
times 31 days times 12 months. That's 5,580 guys.
Yes.
What is the state of, what can be her state of mind? If not just Mofeku.
Yes. It's traumatic. Because this is a bit gross, but just to tell you the volume of some of the things that when she arrived, we placed her with a host family where she still currently stays.
Mm.
And we're grateful for that because she doesn't have to go back to her family, at least not yet. But she complained of stomach ache at the time.
Mm.
And initially we just thought maybe she took her for medicals. They did a lot of tests. There was nothing clearly.
Mm.
Thank God she didn't have HIV AIDS. She didn't have hepatitis.
I mean, that is definitely grace.
No, she didn't have that. But then she still complained about the tummy. So I don't know if you know this thing they do for pregnant women where they ask them to sit on a bowl of hot water.
Yes.
That was the treatment we had to resort to for her. Then broken condoms started coming out of her private
parts. Oh my goodness. Are you kidding me?
So that it means that there were so many that were stuck there. Like, I don't even want
to. So with penetration, it was just driving it in.
Yes.
Oh my goodness.
Yes.
Ha!
So it's horrible. So I don't know how another person would treat another human being
like that.
This fellow human being, and they're trading. And she said they never had any medical anything.
Of course not.
No one
was. It's money. It will be money. No, yes, removing. There's nothing. No hospital care. They won't take them to the hospital because that's out of the money that they're making for them. Wow.
So back to your question.
Like, yes.
What can we do? There has to be massive campaigns from trusted and credible people who would lead this thing. We know that fundamentally the reason why there's nothing wrong with migration, illegal migration or human trafficking is a no-no. But people don't know the questions to ask. And you'll be surprised at how much people pay for a passport. Someone will tell you, well, they asked her to pay 120,000 naira for a passport. I said passport.
Passport is how much?
But because she doesn't know. Sometimes 200. Exactly. But she has never gotten one by herself. So an agent can play on her ignorance and tell her this is what it costs. And because our system is very used to working through agents or working through, through links, you don't really ask, okay, this is 120,000. A mother is ready to go and borrow that money at cooperative for her daughter. Or in one of the cases, you know, her daughters. We have a mom who has three daughters currently in Lebanon. No, it's a man. She doesn't even want them to come back. She's
three.
The money they send to her.
How much money can they be sending her?
They end like, I think, 150 or 200.
That's what I'm saying. So how much could it be?
I don't even know. The girls want to come back home. The mother is saying she has boasted that her children are abroad.
Huh.
How would they now come back home? Oh, they should not. So you see, there's so many angles to it. There is cultural, there is, I don't know how to describe it. We just like to lie. and won't perpetrate that lie. So she doesn't mind her daughter suffering as long as she can pretend her children are abroad and continue to perpetrate that guess. Narrative.
Hey. So,
yeah, exactly. So I think there needs to be a massive campaign in places where people gather. So if they are recruited also by pastors, there needs to be pastors who are also standing on the altar and clearly saying this is wrong and this is how to identify a fraudulent recruiter. When the project I said we did in Lagos Island, almost every week I was in a church or a mosque or an asalatu for Muslims on Sundays. During the week, we're in markets, we're in schools, helping them understand this is how to identify a recruiter. The truth is that there is a limit to what we can do. If we have 774,000 local governments, NAPTIP should be present in all those local governments, have an office where people can inquire about migration, I think, so that if I know there's a Nigerian Migration Center in Lagos and there's another one in Edo State, but I think that's by the GIZ, German Cooperation Agency. The government needs to do more. A lot of NAPTIP's adverts are campaigns on television and at the airport. Once a girl gets to the airport, she's already on her way out. She's not reading anything. She's not reading anything.
If she can read,
people trained to read. Yes, even if she's reading, she's not reading. She's not interested in reading.
Yeah.
Another thing I forgot to mention: in this chain, there is the complicity of immigration officials. In a form that we give the girls to fill, we have a question we ask: well, how did you get out of the country, or what was your process at the airport? And almost, I say almost, because I'm yet to see anyone who says I didn't pay anything. All of them will tell you that they paid boarding fees. Thank God, I know you've traveled a lot.
They paid which boarding fees?
They pay boarding fees of 50,000 and above per
to
person.
Who?
To an immigration official. Again, you know they haven't traveled out before. So there is a big racket. There's complicity at that level as well. All of them. And I have names. I have phone numbers. Some of them pay this money to the agent who is processing these documents. So the agent is the one who is making this payment. Sometimes they ask them, hold your 50,000 naira cash. You're going to give it to this person at the airport. So immigration also is complicit in that because they should be able to see a girl who is in distress or who hasn't traveled and be able to ask her questions. Where are you going to?
It's me they will ask because they think exactly. That I'm going to give them part of my hard earned money.
Exactly. So a lot of them, so it means that the agents who are recruiting are working with immigration.
Of course, a smooth passage.
Of course, immigration will deny it publicly. But out these 300 are the ones that have got come back. We have over 1,000. All 1,000 of them they didn't sit down to have a meeting and say we're going to lie against immigration. And we're talking different countries. So that's another place that needs to be looked into. If they're not exiting, if she gets to the airport, like I know that a lot of airlines currently teach air hostesses to spot or identify a victim of trafficking and provide help.
So that when they get to that, so when they get to the country that they're supposed to go, they can send them back without them meeting the person that's waiting for them.
Yes. So it's because, like I said, the people in this business are it's a big business for them.
It's sex trade, slave trade is huge. It is. It would be because it has to spread. And if it's structured, then there'll be hindrances and roadblocks along the way. So it has to be fluid.
Yeah.
It has to be fluid.
That's the word. It's very fluid. So there's an imam, there's a pastor, there is a community leader, there is anybody. All you need to do get into the business is, do you know anyone who is interested in making her life better? She can earn 70,000 or 200,000 naira working as a salesperson in whatever the country is. Sounds like a good plan. Oh, I know. So if you're an Olusho, for example, and you know that some people have been coming to your church to pray and ask for breakthrough, this is now the breakthrough you introduce to them. And they don't ask questions. They don't ask questions. I think we don't ask enough questions.
We don't. I agree with that.
Because sometimes you ask, when they said you were going to Oman, where exactly were they? Did they tell you were going to work?
Exactly.
The person would, the girls tell you, they told me I was going to work in an office. What does office mean? I mean,
doing what? Office. What does the office do?
I don't know. They said the person would pick me at the airport.
What skill? Who is the person? What's the person's name?
They don't know. The person who is receiving them is the one who has their picture.
Of course.
They don't even know who is the person receiving them on the other end. So it's.
Oshemibi Fim, please let me bring out all my Yoruba antics. Oshemibi Fim Ejo. What?
It's a very serious thing. Very. There are so many. If you see, there's a recent video of, I think, ladies from Saudi Arabia. The ones who just came home are the ones from Lebanon. But there's a recent video for ladies from Saudi Arabia also appealing to the Nigerian government to rescue them. Okay, all of them were trafficked by a company called Titico. TTCO. And the person, the TTCO is the company in Saudi Arabia. But the couple who arranged this is a couple, I think, I have to get their names. Because when the girls fill the form, they fill the names of their agents.
Of the person that is, yes.
It's okay. A couple that's actually facilitated all of this. The girls I said, who are also in Cote d'Ivoire, said it was a couple, husband and wife, that told them about this opportunity. Took about 20 of them to Cote d'Ivoire to work as, they told them they were going to work as hairdressers and all that. And then they found themselves working as sex slaves.
Okay, so in this UAE countries, are they also sex slaves, or does it cut across? So do they actually do the more, let's just say the more moral one? Let's say, are they nannies, or it's mostly sex trade?
No, they have both of them. They have both. The bad thing, especially about Middle Eastern countries, is that there is a culture, a belief that does not really, really, that sees women as property.
Yes. Even their own. Yeah. So there's no, they don't have any compassion in that area, kind of.
Yes. So even you have cases of a son in a house believes that he owns the maid and his ownership extends to sleeping with her.
When he can go and toast the girl outside.
Yes, he believes that this is available. She's their property that they acquired from Nigeria.
Wow.
And they sometimes specifically request for graduates. They request for college-educated graduates because it does something to them that they are able to subdue
that person,
or break down this person. So if the person was not really educated,
then it's not.
It's an ego trip. You are educated in your country and then you are here working as a slave for me. They derive joy from that.
So, of course, they're going to do all that they can to break you.
Even when I talk to them, you can feel the sense of pride that says we are superior to you. You work for us. They talk to them. They say they don't consider them human beings. They treat them as property. I remember we had a tweet conversation around this subject. And someone from Oman, an Omanese, responded and said that when you buy a donkey, do you feed it? That they are bought to work. So do you pamper it? That was his word. Do you pamper it? No, you don't. You flog it. If it doesn't move, you beat it. If it doesn't respond to you on time, it was brought to work. So that's how they perceive the maids that they bring.
Okay, Amotala, I have to reel you in because it's almost 2 p.m. and you've been talking for almost an hour. So this campaign, how do we disseminate this campaign? And while I agree with people that are looked up to, I mean, I'm kind of two minds in that, because, I mean, this is somebody that they also looked up to. For those in the case of where the parents, in the instances where the parents are the ones that are facilitating the trafficking, it will be hard to trust somebody else. So that's one. The campaigns, how do we get this moving? Do you have stuff on your social media page that we can forward and we can talk about? That's one. Two, how do we help these girls that have been repatriated, especially in the mind space? And how are they reintegrated into the community? Because I know it will take a while. I mean, if you've slept with almost 6,000 guys in 1 year, your mind has gone.
Yes. It takes a while. It is a very slow process. But we believe it's doable. Some of them work with counselors, trained counselors, who talk to them, I won't say regularly, but frequently. Because, again, you don't want to talk to her every day. So she doesn't think that's the only subject you are having to discuss with her. So working with trauma counselors is important.
Mm.
Doing medicals, because some of them are not really sure if they are free.
If their health hasn't been compromised. Yes.
And then getting them jobs. Because the reason why
they leave in the first place was economical.
So if we don't get jobs for them, if we don't equip them with skills with which they can earn, they will go back. And I say they will go back because I've had people call me as well saying, can you tell me another country I can go to? And I said, are you okay? You just came back July 11. This is August. What do you mean another country?
The money but that she's going to look for to go to this other country, would she not better use it to start up a small business?
They don't think like that.
I agree.
You see, if they don't think like that. So they need direction.
They need
counseling. So that there's a knowledge gap. What are the labor laws in the country you're going to?
Exactly.
So that you even know if that's where you want to work or not. So where do they go to find out about this? Now I speak to about NAPTIP again. NAPTIP, I've suggested this. NAPTIP has offices only in the state capitals, which means if a girl is in distress or wants to make inquiries, she has to travel to the state capital.
How many of them want to do that? Yeah, exactly. That's not practical.
The other is, even if a girl is in distress, there is no direct line she can call from whatever country she's in to NAPTIP back home.
Technology.
So I would suggest, can NAPTIP have a WhatsApp number, a helpline, where any girl in any country can be given?
Or the link, it's links that you guys use. Forget the number, link. Let them just click on the link and be able to be in that page immediately.
Link and join. Yes. They would begin to have real cases. As I speak, you see, we've had some people evacuated from Lebanon. But as I speak to you, we still have at least 6 houses in Lebanon that we are more or less supporting. 6 houses filled with Nigerian girls. Each house has about average of 40 and 30 girls.
Wow.
When I say house, I mean 2 rooms.
Wow.
And a toilet. Wow. Each of those houses has 4. And we're only able to do that because we have an on-ground contact who helps us with aggregating resources, food items. Lebanon had an explosion the other day. Some of the girls lost their houses. So even though there's a lot of buzz in the media, evacuation, the evacuation is only a tiny fraction of those who are still left there. Lebanon, on the other hand, has been going through an economic crisis. So when they tell you, for example, 1.2 Lebanese pounds, that's actually just $200. You can't really buy much. You can only pay maybe house rent for a month. So a lot of the girls, even whatever it is they earned there, they are old right now. A lot of them are old, and that's a lot of them have escaped from their slave master's house. But they really can't. They can't go back home. They can't afford to buy a ticket. If they need to pay a COVID test, that's about $35. If they need to get a ticket that's between $600 or $700, which a lot of them cannot afford right now. So that's, so I'm just mentioning that there are still many people who are stranded. We're only able to help them working with other, because to do it, no organization can do it alone. That's one. I can assure you. No organization can do it alone. We keep partnering different people on ground. In every country, we find a church, we find a law enforcement person, we find somebody in the police who can help us, because some of the girls are taken to prison and you need to help with. If a girl is taken to prison where they only speak Arabic and she's only English speaking, she's doomed.
Yeah, that's true.
Who negotiates for her?
Nobody.
She would only... So we have to find people. And some churches have been very, very helpful, like providing mattresses for the girls. It's a Nigerian church in Lebanon that provided for those girls, about 30 girls, providing food, providing...
It's good. It's good.
Providing... they gave them food, clothing, beds. So different people need to... We can't do it alone. I just need to mention that.
I agree with you. I agree with that.
It's a collaboration. What people can do.
Okay, so this is obviously this is not a subject that can be exhausted in 1 hour. So I'm going to extract a promise from you that in the not too distant future we're going to continue this conversation, and then also since it's in collaboration, I mean, if you also have an avenue where we can speak about it regularly and get other people to key in and partner, I mean, we would volunteer ourselves in one way or the other, because this is, you've rightly said, and you keep stressing, this is not a one-man fight. So Spirit of Nigeria Radio is saying to you now that we're very, very interested in helping out in this, because it's a problem for all of us. And it's okonlomo, as they say in Yoruba, is the person that he touches that will know. Exactly. And the thing is, we're only one person, 6 degrees of separation. We're only how many, one person away from the next person who we know, who has suffered this thing. See the one of this video that you said that the uncle abroad. So, I mean, come on. So we're committing that we're going to partner with you in this. And we are definitely, so that's Spirit of Nigeria Radio, we're definitely going to call you back and iron out how we can do this. Because it's not something that we can do right now. Omotola, I want to thank you very much, profusely, from the bottom of my heart. And Spirit of Nigeria Radio thanks you too for the work that you're doing, for the fact that you found out and you didn't walk away. I mean, that is commendable. And just from reading your bio, we know how many things your hands are into. But this is for me, it has opened my eyes too. I mean, I thought I knew a lot about it, but I've learned a lot more. And like you said, the more you learn, the more you know you don't know. So we will continue this conversation. Thank you once again for sparing your time. I know it was early in the morning for you. Thank you for talking for 1 hour straight without taking a break. So much for the promised music breaks. But we shall do this again. It's after 2 now. Thank you so much, Omotola. God bless you. Enjoy the rest of your day. And we shall do this again shortly. Thank you.
Okay.
All right then. All right.
Thank you.
Wow. Spirit of Nigeria Radio, Weekend Vibe, Weekend Nigeria, Money Weekend Vibes. My brain is scrambled. Weekend Nigeria, Spirit of Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians and diaspora up to speed. Okay, we'll be back.
Spirit of Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed.